This is the Financial Sense News Hour. With the president of PFS Group, Jim Poplava. Since 1982, PFS Group has offered asset management and educational resources that have helped investors build, maintain, and preserve their wealth. And now, our lifetime income experts, Jim Poplava and Kathleen Harris.
Hi, everyone. I'm Jim Poplava, and welcome to our first lifetime income show of the year. Hope everybody had a happy holiday and wishing you all a prosperous new year. And we're going to be here to help this year be more prosperous. And of course, we're going to start talking about planning as we do here, but we're going to change the focus a little bit today and focus on education. So we'll be talking about that with the guests later on in the program. But I thought this was a really good way to start out the year because, John, as you know, many of the things that we talk about here are retirement planning. But unfortunately, when you're thinking about retirement planning, well, prior to retirement, you've got other expenses along the way.
Right. And I'm John Lufter sitting in for Kathleen Harris, who's on vacation, although I'm far prettier than she is. And as you mentioned later on in the program, Colin Mustan Luxembourg will be joining you talking about 529 college plans, how to save tax-free for college. As we're focusing on education, you need to realize that next to purchasing a home for parents, one of the biggest expenses they're going to face is going to be that of education, especially, and it goes up rather proportionately with the number of kids that you have. I can attest to this from personal experience. Unfortunately, the expense of education, especially when it gets really expensive, as far as expenses go, this happens at a critical period, just 10 to 15 years prior to retirement. So they're trying to juggle getting the house paid off, planning for retirement, and getting their kids through institutes of higher learning. And more than the CPI, cost of housing, healthcare, education has been rising at 7.45% per annum versus healthcare at 5.8 or housing at 4.3. So parents and their children need to plan wisely as to how they are going to pay for their children's education. And frankly, Jim, I have favored indentured servitude on the part of your children.
Put them in chains.
Make them work for it. Okay.
Well, you know, this is something, John, that we've discussed on the program in the past. And we talk about when, you know, young couples get married, they're starting out and they're coming up with a plan. You know, there's so many goals that young couples have. Probably the first and biggest one is usually, you know, hoping to own a home someday. That's usually at the top of the list. If you start a family, then you're thinking about a college education for your kids. And then further down the road is retirement. You know, obviously, if you're married in your 20s, you know, you're 25 years old, you're thinking, hey, 65, that's 40 years from now. Why do I need to even think about that now? We'll tell you later on in the year why you should be thinking about that, whether you're 20 or 25. But, you know, the problem, as you just mentioned, in some of those costs, the fastest rising cost of just about anything, more so than even healthcare, has been the cost of an education. It's been rising at almost 8% a year. And the problem many parents have and families in this country is the wages haven't kept up with the rising cost of education. And John, one of the biggest mistakes I see made in retirement planning is parents going deep into debt to pay for the kids' college education, especially when they're only 10, maybe 15 years away from retirement. It's a time you want to be increasing the amount of money that you save. And it's also a time you want to be reducing the amount of debt that you carry. Instead, we see this happen so many times. Many parents are taking out second mortgages on their home. They're adding more debt at a time they really should be reducing debt to plan for that retirement.
Well, obviously, it would seem that the best approach, if you're talking about planning for education, would be an early savings plan. When you're coming home from the hospital, stop at the bank and start a savings program.
Yeah, honey, I know you want to get home with the baby, but we're going to stop off at the bank.
I have known couples that did that, Jim. In other words, that when they came home with their first baby, they already set it up. But the other concept is shared expenses, where maybe the parents are going to put in X amount of dollars, and then the kids, obviously in their teenage years prior to college, are going to work their summers or even full year while they're studying elsewhere to try to help pay for that as well. So it's like a matched program.
Yeah. One of the problems, John, is that a lot of parents are facing, and even their children as they come out of college, is it's really getting harder and harder to justify the cost of education versus, let's say, the job benefits that accrue after college. I mean, it used to be, you know, it was like, John, when you and I were growing up, having a college degree was everything. And we had all these studies talking about multiples more of income that you would earn over your lifetime as a result of a college education versus, let's say, becoming a manual laborer or doing something without a college education. But the problem is, the costs are getting so high is that many couples are starting out life as a young couple with enormous amounts of debt. And it's not unusual to see couples carrying $100,000 of debt for both the husband and wife with both going to college. Now, the national average right now, this is of college students, is $29,400 worth of debt. If you go to private school or out-of-state school, John, that number is over $100,000. That's a lot of money.
You know what? We put three kids through college. Our youngest now is a PhD candidate, and I won't mention which university since I don't want to bring his life into ours, except for the fact that he was in a class in probable statistics of predictions using statistics. And the visiting professor that came in said, you know, he said, there were a number of people. You could have used certain algorithms to predict what was going to happen in the 2007 market crash. And he said, and Jim Poplava was one of them that accurately predicted it. And Troy said, you know, up until that point, he was sort of dozing until he heard the gentleman mention Jim Poplava. And I said, well, it's a small world, isn't it? Well, we used a combination. In some cases, we paid as you went. If your kids keep up good grades, you can qualify for scholarships, especially if you're in the minority areas. We've helped raise some minority kids, too, and would always point out, you know, that's available. If you work it right, you can get a free ride. Scholarships, fellowships do help. Not going immediately to a four-year institution also works. You can get the credit that you need for all of the standard routine courses that you're going to have at a junior college, which is locally, which helps your children transition because they're going through a transition period. And rather than having them move far away and then worry about all the implications of that sociologically or otherwise, they can go to college during the day. They get used to the feel of the college environment, but they come home at night. So it's a half and half before they wind up in a dorm or other kind of frat house situation. So we used a whole strategy of anything that worked. In other words, we just kept working and making it work, and somehow we got through it.
Yeah, we sort of did a different approach. We had set some money aside, but we didn't have it in our kids' names because I can tell you some horror stories about clients I've had. I can think of one client. It was a doctor. He was putting $500 a month into an education program. Well, this was in the 80s, and you imagine what the stock market did in the 80s. In the 90s, by the time his son got to college age, you know, he had close to a couple $100,000. The problem, it was all in the kid's name, and being in the kid's name, he had something that was in his name that he could do with it whatever he wanted. And I'm not going to get into what he did. But what we did, John, my oldest son was valedictorian of his graduating class. And of course, you know, everybody's thinking Stanford, Harvard, you know, some big Ivy League school that you're going to go to and look at the cost. The problem is my son didn't know what he wanted to be. And I'm sure many parents face this, or you have kids that are in school or getting out of high school and it's, hey, you got to go to college, but they really don't know what they want to be. And I mean, take a look at how technology evolved. And so what we did is we said with our kids, look, and I did this myself. I went 2 years to a junior college because I worked my way through college. I didn't want to have any debt. I had a job. You know what it's like, John, working your way through college.
Yeah, I did that.
Yeah, you did that too.
I worked full time at a radio station while I was going to college full time. At night, it was doing classical music so I could put on a piece by Beethoven and then sit there and study.
You know, that's funny. I parked cars, and once the rush for dinner got over, I was out there with the spotlight that the restaurant had on the covered portico, and I was sitting there studying. But anyway, I went to junior college, and then I went on to Arizona State University and graduated, and then I got scholarships to graduate school. But my degree from Arizona State didn't say, well, it's only a part bachelor's degree because he really wasn't here the 4 years. So what we decided to do, unless our kids had something specific that they were going to go to, and I only had one son that when he was out of high school, he had a definite degree that he wanted to pursue for his profession, which was in web-based and technology and graphic design. But we had our kids go to junior college. I can remember, John, when I went to junior college, of course, I'm going to give away our age. I went to Phoenix College. It was $45 a semester. I got my 2-year degree for $180 in tuition. My books cost more than my tuition. So our two oldest sons went to a junior college, and it was amazing because my middle son, Chris, wanted to be a veterinarian. He was working in high school for a vet, which explains how we ended up with four big dogs and pets. Every time there was a stray puppy, we probably ended up with it. But then he changed his mind, and then he went to work for Pfizer in their research department with drug experimentation. And then, of course, he went on to get a biochemistry degree at Cal Poly and graduated at the top of his class. But a lot of students don't know what they want to be. They don't know if the profession that they're going to pursue will offer them a job. And so a junior college is one way to bring the cost down. And that's what we did. And it brought down the cost considerably for three of our kids.
All right. Say I'm a parent and I've got kids in grade school and we know that college is coming. It's not too late to start even in high school. What do you do when you jump in? People say you need a plan. That usually gives you a panic feeling. How do you de-panicize it?
Well, I mean, the best way to plan for college is to start early. I mean, when you first get married, you're starting a family. You mentioned, you know people that started out with bank accounts. So you want to plan early. You want to do so tax efficiently. And the next best thing is look at college from a reality point of view. If you don't have enough money, I'm a big proponent of junior colleges. I mean, my bachelor's degree says Arizona State University. It doesn't say half degree from Arizona State because I only went there 2 years. So I'm a big proponent of junior college, bringing the cost down. I mean, do you really want to pay $50,000 for English 101? I mean, when you can pay much less at a junior college. So if you don't have money, think of a junior college and give the kid time to sort out kind of what they want to be. And it saves a tremendous amount of dollars. So I'm a big proponent of that. And also the idea of working as you and I did, John, because it is through work. It was like my son, after working at a vet, decided, I don't think I want to be a veterinarian. And it was that work experience that convinced him that, no, this isn't really what I want to do for the rest of my life. Even though he's not in biochemistry now, he's working in the business with me, managing portfolios. But several of us change jobs. You know, I started out with a Big 8 accounting firm, went in corporate life before I got into the investment field. So think of your own career if you're listening to this program. How many of you listening to this program have changed your own career, changed jobs, or something comes up? Maybe you started your own business. And if your children are listening to this program, think of what they may be thinking. You know, Dad wants me to go to law school, or, you know, the parents want us to do this, but I don't know if I really want to do that. So that's why, John, I think the junior college ideas is a great idea.
You know, my son, Troy, threw me a curveball, too. When he got within a year of graduation, he said, you know, I'm within so many credits of a second degree at his first degree in chemistry. And he says, I can get a degree in math. So I want to go longer.
Oh, thanks, Dad.
Right. Oh, thanks. I didn't budget for that, but somehow we managed to get through it. And he graduated from undergraduate work with a bachelor's in science and a bachelor's in mathematics. And now, of course, he's a PhD candidate. So we seem to have done something right. You did a show last year, if you remember, Jim, 10 Trends Shaping the Future. Education is a big issue. It's a real hot button with mine. One of the reasons that we homeschooled our kids all the way up through high school, as a matter of fact, so we could give them intense education. And then there are changes at the collegiate level as well. I mean, I have a very firm belief system that the one critical thing parents need to do is take charge of their kids' education. If you rely on the public school system to do it for you, you will be disappointed. And I say that with no reservations whatsoever, but go ahead.
Yeah, one of the big things that we're seeing this, and there's been several articles from the Wall Street Journal to magazines of financial planning, from Fortune magazine to Business Week, on how education is changing. And one of the things that's going to be changing, John, is work versus school. I mean, the World War II generation, many of them never had a college degree. They got out of high school, went to work in a trade or a factory. And I think you're going to see a return of that in some way. So work versus school, because remember, you're going to school for 4 years, you're foregoing earning income. So by working, you're cash flow positive versus debt. So that's a trend you're going to see more of. Number two, that work experience adds to your resume versus book knowledge and may even change the outcome of your education. Like in my own family, my son changed his degree having the work experience. He said, you know what? I really don't want to be a veterinarian. So having work experience makes you more valuable in terms of a candidate for a job. It also may reshape what you're thinking about in terms of your education. Number three, it also helps make the decision of finding the right field for a job prospect. One of the most frightening things and maybe discouraging things for many college students today is, you know, you pursue this degree without thinking of what are the job prospects? What are my earning prospects if I get a degree in this field? What's the job? What am I likely to make versus the decision of that education? Another thing that you're going to see more and more is colleges are now actually cutting expenses. The big Ivy League schools have competition. You're seeing more online education. It's a cheaper way for the future. You can get a top-line professor, put them on film. I mean, John, what's the difference of taking a course online? Gosh, there was one class, it was a one-on-one class. I'm trying to think of his English or whatever it was. John, there was like 200-something students in the auditorium for this class. So it was really the professor up there lecturing. There wasn't a lot of interaction, no different than, and on a lot of these online courses with instant messaging, you know, it's almost like being there in the classroom. So online, and then number five, you know, by working, taking courses online, the experience, getting out of college with no debt when you graduate, which was my case. You know, I worked my way through college, and I was fortunate enough to get two scholarships when I got out of undergraduate to graduate school. So Mary and I, when we started out, we had no debt. So when we got a job, or I got a job, we were able to buy a house because we didn't have this enormous debt load. And I think, John, you're already starting to see this paradigm shift. For the first time, these big Ivy League private schools are facing a long-term decline in enrollment. More than a quarter of private institutions have seen a drop of 10% or more of enrollment. You're starting to see some of these private colleges actually going through downsizing, getting rid of faculty. Even elite institutions have been spared, and some are getting credit downgrades. And I think a lot of parents now are starting to look at these issues, and they're making wiser choices as a family, because you have those decisions. Most boomers aren't like their parents looking at a defined benefit pension plan where they're going to get the majority of their salary when they retire. So they have to make a trade-off decision between the cost of funding a very expensive education and their own retirement. And then also, I think both parents and students are looking at a practical area of study. Hey, if I do spend this money for education, what are my likely job prospects when I get out? And I think that you're seeing, John, right now, a lot more competition coming in. MIT is putting some of its courses online. Other universities are putting their entire program online where you can get a degree in order to keep the cost down. So I think this is just going to be one more trend that you're going to see. And one of the reasons that education costs have grown so much is the cost of administration. At the University of Michigan, for example, there's 53% more administrators. In other words, there's more chiefs than there are Indians. And that's driving up the cost of education. And one of the big trends you're going to see over this next decade is a lot of these private schools are not only going to start going to online to bring the cost down, they're also going to start getting rid of a lot of the bloated bureaucracy that's driving up those costs. And you're going to see it become a lot more cost competitive as you head into this next decade. Because simply, the cost of education, you talk about $50,000, $60,000 a year for some of these schools, and we're going to talk about a case study here that illustrates that. It's just way beyond. I mean, you take a family that, let's say, have three children, and they want three kids to go to a private school, you're talking about almost $750,000 to get those three kids through school. You almost have to become a multimillionaire. So I think these are some of the big trends you're going to see in the future.
One of the interesting things I remember you talked about, which you piqued my curiosity on when we did that thing back then on trends facing us in the near future in education, was companies designing their own degree program. And I can see why they would do that. One, it matches the company needs. The other thing is companies and also the military are rather upset at the low caliber of what's coming out of public school nowadays, and they have to have all these remediation programs, and or the colleges aren't teaching to the real world, so to speak. So tell me more about that.
Yeah, one of the things that you're seeing, and it's a new trend, you're seeing a lot of these manufacturing companies, because one of the things that's occurring in this country is a manufacturing renaissance. And what you're seeing is a lot of companies are going to junior colleges and saying, we want you to design for us a certification program. So in other words, you may go to a junior college, and instead of coming out with an AA degree, you may come out with a certification program that's specifically designed that you can go directly into manufacturing. We talked about how manufacturing renaissance, the manufacturing here in the future is going to be different. It's not going to be Larry Sixpack putting a bumper on a car. It's going to be Carl Computer working with this big computer that's operating this $20 million robotic machine. And so a lot of companies are not only designing their own certificate programs, working with junior colleges, once again, a big proponent of junior colleges, because they're not happy with the skill set with a lot of graduating students. And manufacturing companies are also working with online schools and community colleges to create what they call stackable certificates that are multiple, just like your son Troy got 2 degrees, you may get multiple certificates in either robotics or some other thing that really enhances your job skill. I know my daughter-in-law is an aeronautical engineer for Northrop Grumman, and she got her master's degree online working with Northrop Grumman in a college. So her master's degree, she got online, and you're seeing a lot of manufacturing firms are doing this, John. It's almost like these certificates are going to replace college degrees in specialization, kind of like, remember the trade guilds of the Middle Ages.
So summing up what we've been discussing here right now, the important part is, of course, planning. There is going to be an interesting series of education choices, which are changing in the future and changing the future as well. Works versus school, work experience, sometimes internship, sometimes fellowships, making the right decision for a degree, relating to the job market itself. There will be much more in the area of online schools because you can accomplish much of the same thing with terrifically lower budgets. And if we ever move into that period of time when we keep talking about, Jim, when things get rather critical with the economy, that may become even more and more important. Having no debt is a nice way to start your life rather than coming out of college and having huge amounts of debt, perhaps even skill certification to get you right into the workforce. But if we are doing our planning, how do you save and invest as a part of that planning?
Well, assuming that you're starting out early, let's say you're married, you've got the house, you're starting a family, and you're thinking, okay, let's start putting some money aside. The longer time frame that you have to the time you have to start funding that education, I like the stock market because you're going to get a better rate of return. And then also, I like using tax efficiency. If you buy individual stocks, like dividend-paying stocks, you can just sit there, reinvest the dividends and compound them. Dividends are taxed at a lower tax bracket, 10 to 15% or 20 to 23%, depending on where your income falls. So I like stocks or stock mutual funds, especially the longer time frame you have to save for college, because you're going to get a much higher return and have much more money if you start early and have a longer time frame. I also like tax efficiency, which is why I like individual stocks. Or if you're in a really super high tax bracket, you could do things like a laddered zero coupon municipal bond portfolio, or you can do something which we're going to be discussing in today's interview, a 529 college plan to minimize taxes. But John, tax efficiency and growth type investments, and especially if you have a time frame of more than a decade, I mean, if you're only looking at 2 or 3 years away, then obviously you don't want to think of the stock market. But the longer the time frame, stocks have proven to be a far superior investment. And especially if you're doing it on a monthly basis, you can pick a stock mutual fund or individual stocks, or depending on your income bracket, you could do things like a laddered tax-free zero coupon bonds, municipal bonds that are tax-free. So there's a number of ways you can do this for tax efficiency, but also you really want to get growth the further you away from paying those college tuition bills.
We want to do here a case study that addresses this very issue, where you had a case where you had parents with a very, very bright daughter, got accepted to a very, very reputable school, but the costs were way above what theoretically they could afford. So let's discuss Joe and Kathy Simpson and their daughter, Jennifer.
You know, this is a case I want to discuss because I think a lot of our listeners are going to relate to this. It really reflects a situation that many families in this country find themselves in. In the case of Simpsons, Joe was an engineer at Qualcomm. Kathy was a dental hygienist. This was a second marriage. Kathy had two children, and then between Joe and Kathy, they had one child of their own. Their oldest daughter, Jennifer, had very, very high college entrance exam scores, almost a 4.0 student. She was accepted to USC. The problem is, John, USC, the tuition was $50,000 a year. And the problem they had is they had about $30,000 saved up, mainly that were gifts from Kathy's parents that were in the child's name. And sometimes that could be a disadvantage when you have assets in the child's name if they're applying for financial aid. The problem was Jennifer wanted to be a teacher. So you were really looking at over $200,000 for a private education that would produce a job that Jennifer would probably start out as a teacher here in California at about $40,000 a year. And so now here's what we were dealing with in terms of assets. The Simpsons owned a home, $900,000 with roughly, let's call it about a $500,000 mortgage against that. So they had $400,000 of equity, and they were thinking of tapping that equity for education. Joe had a 401k program at work at $600,000 value plus about $100,000 stock in Qualcomm stock. So he was thinking maybe selling the stock, or even you could take loans from 401k. Kathy's 401k was about $90,000. They had about $40,000 of IRAs between them. They had a little more than about $12,000 in savings in the bank. So a couple of things that they were looking at when they were looking at Jennifer. I mean, you know, what parent wouldn't want their kid accepted to a top private school? You know, imagine if you had a child that was accepted to Harvard or Stanford, you would think, oh my goodness, here's a chance for my kid to go to one of the best educational institutions in the country. So they were looking at three options. Option one was to take out a second mortgage on their home because they had over $400,000 of equity. A second option was Jennifer to take out a student loan to help pay for this because, you know, there's a lot of financial aid packages and loans. And then the third one would be to go to junior college for a couple of years and then a state school for 2 years. So those were basically the three options. And one of the problems that the Simpsons had, as bright as Jennifer was, they also had two other kids. So, I mean, if you're going to spend $200,000 for one child, what are you going to do if the others are just as bright and they get accepted to a private college? What do you tell them? So this was a very difficult decision.
Well, given the situation, how did it work out anyway?
I managed to convince them option three was the best route for them to take out, because taking out a line of credit of $150,000 or maybe even more out on their home just was not the right thing to be doing right now. Number one, it was going to saddle them with debt. It was taking away from equity that someday that they may need to provide for their retirement, because they were short of their retirement goals in terms of where they were going to be, especially in this low interest rate environment. And the other thing is Joe was only 12 years away from retirement. Did it really make sense when you have three kids to take out a mortgage for $150,000 or second in your house for your first kid? You know, then what do you tell your second kid? And what do you tell your third? And they didn't have enough for their retirement goals. And, you know, I met with them, met with their daughter, and we just kind of diagrammed it on a little white slateboard I had. And I said, Jennifer, look, you know, you're talking about $200,000, whether you have to pay for that yourself through some education loans that you're going to have to take and get saddled with, or your parents at their age right now are going to have to take on this debt. And then what are you going to do with your other sister and brother? And so it was very difficult, but she understood. And we looked at option one. The second mortgage didn't make sense. She certainly saw the wisdom of, yeah, you're right. I don't know if I would want six-figure debt, especially going out to being a teacher. I mean, if she was going to go work on Wall Street or something, and she was going to Harvard, and you're going to work at Goldman Sachs, you might be thinking differently. And I also told her, I said, imagine, Jennifer, at someday you'll probably end up getting married. If you have six-figure debt or close to it, and your potential future husband has that kind of debt, how are you going to ever start a family? How are you going to ever have a house or own a home when you start out with over $100,000 debt between the two of you? And so this enormous amount of debt would be unlikely as many couples are finding today that, you know, you want to live in an apartment for 10 or 15 years when you first get married. So, you know, this was something, John, it took a little convincing, but I think in the end, you know, as we explained the numbers, went over the numbers, that's exactly what they did. You know, junior college, that's affordable. They had the money in the education programs that had been set up through Kathy's parents for their grandkids. And so that made it a lot more reasonable, and especially given the employment outcome for Jennifer as a teacher. You know, teachers can maybe work up here, depending on what you do, 75, 80,000, but they usually start out in the high 30s or low $40,000. Compare that to over $200,000 for a cost of education.
Jim, as we summarize it all up, we're going to hear here from columnist Dan Luxenberg about 529 college plans. Remember, number one, start early. When you're visiting your OBGYN, remember to open up the savings account or start the investment.
When you get the news, guess what? You're pregnant. Right. You know, get your husband and head down to the bank.
There we go. All right. Number two, either at the bank or make the right investments. That's number two. Number three, minimize taxation. I mean, like, that's a no-brainer. We do that all the time, right? Number four, do a cash flow. And this one's important. Do a cash flow versus cost-benefit analysis of the degree itself before you plan on going into something like that. Consider, perish the thought, work while you're in college or prior to college. And you can get a lot of your education online or at a junior college. So those are all good ideas for this whole process.
And speaking of one of those goals, which is saving tax efficiently for a college education, we're going to talk about that with 529 college plans, a means of saving and taking the money and the earnings out tax-free to pay for college with my guest, Stan Luxenberg, right after this. One of the biggest expenses most parents will face before they get into retirement are college. College costs have been going up at almost 8% a year. How do you pay for that? How do you save for it? Well, there are some plans in place that have been put into effect by government to help you do just that. Joining me on the program this week is Stan Luxenberg. He's a freelance writer for TheStreet.com and WealthManagement.com. Stan, let's talk about something the government put into place. It's called a 529 plan. I wonder if you might just help our listeners out and explain, what is a 529 plan?
Each one of the states offers a 529 savings plan, and it allows you to set aside money. You can invest it in mutual funds or other kinds of assets, and the earnings compound tax-free. So this is a great tax shelter for a lot of people. And as long as you take the money out to pay for higher education, there's no tax when you take the money out to pay for it. So there are real tax advantages. And in addition, some states allow you to take deductions from your state income taxes. So you can put money into your 529 plan and deduct the value of the deposit against your state taxes. So it's a big advantage for a lot of people.
Now, are there any disadvantages? I know sometimes when parents are applying for college aid, the college aid officer may look at, okay, how much money is in the kid's name? And maybe sometimes that has an effect. Are there any disadvantages?
The money that's in your 529 plan can impose a small penalty on your eligibility for financial aid. But usually the tax savings can compensate for that. So most people should consider using a 529 plan and not worry about the small penalties that you might incur from financial aid situations.
Now, I know that in 2009, in the American Recovery and Reinvestment Act, they've added some new features to the 529 plan. Would you care to cover what those features are? And what does it mean for a 529 plan if you already have one or thinking of having one?
There have been a number of changes in recent years. I mean, tax rates have gone up. So the value of the tax shelter is now more valuable than it was. Other things have changed, too. For high-income families, you can set aside money into the 529 plan, and you remove it from your taxable estate. So it's a way to shelter taxes from estate taxes. Say that you have wealthy grandparents. They can immediately put $70,000 into a 529 plan, and that money is removed from their taxable estate. The next generation will never have to pay taxes on it. And other people, you can give up to $14,000 a year into a 529 plan, and that money is free from gift taxes or estate taxes. So there are lots of good shelter opportunities for people.
You know, I guess, Stan, one question that you mentioned earlier, that there may be some penalties in terms of getting financial aid if you have a 529 plan, but let's get into the tax advantages. Why use a 529 plan? I guess a lot of it depends on your tax bracket, because we know last year, for example, the Clinton-era tax rates were put into effect for singles and married couples, depending on their gross income. So let's talk about some of the advantages of how this plays out for somebody that's in, let's say, a higher tax bracket.
So you have the two tax shelters. On the one hand, your earnings are not taxable. Now, the one possible problem here is if you do have to spend the money for higher education. So suppose your child doesn't go to college. If you wind up doing that and you decide to pull the money out of the college savings plan, you'd have to then pay income taxes on the earnings, and there would be a 10% penalty on the earnings. So there is that risk. But the tax shelter for most people is a very compelling opportunity. Say you live in New York State and you're in a high income bracket. All your earnings would be sheltered, and you can put up to $300,000 into the 529 plan. So that's a lot of assets that you can tax shelter for a long period of time. Now, if you don't spend the money on one child, you can transfer the account and spend it on a different child or on a niece or a nephew or a friend. So there are lots of opportunities to use it. Now, say you're in New York State. In addition, you can deduct your contributions from your state income taxes. In New York, you can deduct up to $10,000 a year from your state income taxes. So for a high income investor, they could save up to $500 a year in state income taxes by using the 529. And for people in other states, the benefits could even be higher.
When you say you get a deduction for contributions, not all states. So you mentioned New York. What about California?
I don't know about the California rules, but a lot of states don't give you a deduction. I believe California doesn't. And there are some states that don't have income taxes, like Texas, so there's no advantage from those states. So you really have to check, because each state has different rules.
There's two basic 529 plans. There's prepaid tuition plans and savings plans. Can you talk about and distinguish between the two?
Some of the most popular plans are the savings plan. So what you do is, for the savings plan, you put money into portfolios that are designed by different states, and they go into mutual funds. So they're operated by different mutual fund companies. Vanguard has a big program. T. Rowe Price has a program. American funds have programs. And you invest the money into these mutual funds. Now, typically how they do it, you have two choices. Say you're a conservative investor. You say, I want to put all my money in bonds, or I want to put most of my money in bonds. And you put it in for a newborn child, and then when they're 18 and you start spending the money will be invested the same way. Maybe it's 100% in bonds or 50% in bonds, 50% in stocks, and it'll stay invested that way. Now, the other alternative is age-based. So how the funds do it is they would start out with a heavy allocation to equities, and as the child ages and the college tuition bills approach, you would shift to a more conservative allocation. So you might start out with a newborn, 80% of the assets would be in stocks and 20% in bonds. And by the time that child's 19, you would have 10% in stocks and 90% in bonds. Now, the prepaid plans allow you to pay state tuition in advance. So you put aside a certain amount of money that's going to be used for college tuition. Now, the advantage of this is you're protected against any tuition rises that might happen in the future.
So in essence, what you're doing is funding these education expenses in advance, so they get that money in advance and can use it.
That's right.
Now, let's talk about contribution limits. Let's say, you know, I'm a parent, I've got two kids, and I'm thinking, okay, this is a nice way for me to save for education. I know that there's gifts that you can make to children each year. There's a gift limitation per adult. Are there limitations in terms of 529 plans?
Well, the gift taxes apply to 529 plans. So the limit is you can give $14,000 a year to a child. If you give more than that, then the gift tax rules kick in. So most people wouldn't necessarily want to do it. Now, the one provision that they do have for 529 plans is that the first year, you can put 5 years' worth of contributions in that first year. So instead of $14,000, you can put $70,000 in that first year, and there's no gift tax. Now, after you put the $70,000 in, you cannot then turn around and give another $70,000 the next year. But it is a way for wealthy parents to put a lot of money into a tax shelter right away.
In a recent article in Investing, it was called When 529s Don't Make the Grade. Let's talk about that.
One of the plans is different. So some of the plans have very good fund investment offerings, and some are not so good. And one of the big differences is the expenses. So you have some states that have expenses that are more than 1.7% annual expenses, and other states are less than 0.2%. So what you really need to do is shop around. Now, you're free to invest in any of the state plans. So if you live in California, you can invest in the Vermont plan and use the money for a child who's going to college in North Carolina. The New York state plan has a very low expense ratio, less than 0.2%. And what the New York state plan does is it offers a Vanguard index fund. So for someone who wants index funds, this is a very good way to do it. There's a very simple alternative. It's just two Vanguard index funds, the total stock market, total bond market index funds. That's a very cheap way to do it. Other states have different offerings. If somebody likes the T. Rowe Price funds, you can go to the Maryland plan and use the T. Rowe Price funds. Those are good funds. They've had good long-term track records. Before you do any of this, though, you want to take a look at the tax situation, because if you're in a high tax state and there's a state tax benefit for keeping the money in state, then maybe you do want to stay in state. Now, if you're in a state that doesn't have income taxes at all, you have an incentive to look around the whole country. Alaska has a very popular plan with very low expense ratios. So there are people from various states who are going to invest in the Alaska plan.
Are there any reasons why you wouldn't want to have one? And let's say I'm saving for college. And before I do that, let's get back to this prepaid plan. One of the difficulties that I would see with that is, let's say you have a boy genius. You have a son who's very smart, and you're thinking, okay, this guy's going to go to Harvard or Stanford. But if you pick a college, what happens when it comes time for application if he's not accepted?
Well, each of the states has a different plan, but usually what happens is you can apply the assets to go to a different school. There usually isn't a penalty for that. Now, what happens, say you put the money aside, the child gets a scholarship, free tuition at West Point. Now, you're going to lose the tax shelter. So you say, okay, I've set aside $300,000. My son went to West Point. I can't use it for higher education. So I need to take the money out of the account. You're going to have to pay income taxes on the earnings. But in that case, you haven't really lost anything. You've just postponed paying the income taxes. There's no penalty. If the child does not go to college, then there is a 10% penalty on the earnings. So there is that risk. If the child dies or is handicapped, then there is no tax penalty. So the risk is you put the money aside. Your child says, I don't want to go to college. I'm going to play in a rock band. Then you could face a 10% penalty on the earnings.
So you can basically have some flexibility here. Let's talk about, you've saved this money, and you have this pile of money in a 529 plan. All of a sudden, Junior decides, you know what, Dad? I'm not going to college. I've just enlisted in the Marine Corps, and I'm going in the service. And I've seen this with a couple clients.
Mm-hmm.
What happens to this money then?
Well, there are a couple things you can do. First of all, if the child comes out of the service 5 years later and then goes to college, you can use it then. Or you can apply it to somebody else. Maybe the child's younger brother goes to college and you can spend the money for the younger child. So you don't have to take the money out of the account right away. You can even spend it on yourself. Say you're a grandparent, you give the money to the child. Maybe they don't use it all. Maybe you put $300,000 in and there's still $50,000 left. And you decide you're going to take some college classes. You can use it to pay college classes and there's no tax penalty.
Oh, you're kidding.
So there is some flexibility.
So you do have some flexibility. So if Junior decides to go into the Marine Corps and you have a daughter, you can switch the plan over to the daughter for her education. And whatever you don't use, let's say that later on you decide that you want to pursue a degree or take some extra courses at college, you can use that money for yourself. Let's take the extreme case where you've got this money. Maybe there's some money left over, or none of your children decide to go to college. Maybe they do something different. Now you got a pile of money that's there and it can't be used for education. What happens when you pull it out? I assume it's all taxable income.
That's right. So the earnings are taxable. You owe income taxes on the earnings at your income tax rate. And there's a 10% penalty on the earnings on top of that. So the gamble that you're making is that you put this money aside, you don't pay any income taxes on it for as long as the child is a young person, but you could wind up paying a 10% penalty on the earnings. That's the gamble you're making. But while the money is in the 529 plan, it's a perfect tax shelter. I mean, you don't owe any taxes year after year after year. There's no tax statements at all.
But the one drawback, once again, is if there's money left over, if you pull it out that isn't used for education, you're going to pay ordinary income plus a 10% tax penalty. Almost reminds me, Stan, of kind of like IRAs, where you pull out money prior to age 59 and a half, you pay ordinary income taxes, and there's that 10% penalty.
Yeah, they're trying to discourage people from using these things inappropriately. So there is that risk.
Is there any risk? You know, Congress can giveth and they can taketh away. So is there any risk that down the road they're looking for tax revenues and they're saying, you know what, people that have a certain level of income or something like that, that they take away some of the advantages? It's kind of like what they did with Social Security, where it was tax-free, then 50% was taxable based on income, then 85%. Is there any risk of that?
It's always possible that Congress would do something like that, but for the short term, I don't think there's any risk. There's a lot of talk in Washington that it's hard for people to pay for college expenses. So the 529 plan right now has a lot of support in Washington, and I don't think that they would trim it back.
Well, Stan, if our listeners would like to find out more about 529 plans, I know the IRS has a publication on 529. Any other areas that they can go to get information so that they can maybe decide whether they want a prepaid plan or the savings plan?
All the states have 529 offices and plans, so you can search for those. Savingsforcollege.com is a website that has information on 529 plans. Now, the other thing is, if you have a financial advisor, whether it's one of the big brokers or one of the other companies, they all have plans to help with 529 plans, and the financial advisors are eager to help clients do this.
Well, listen, Stan, I want to thank you for joining us here on Lifetime Income. Once again, if you're listening to this and maybe you're in that situation, you're in a higher tax bracket, saving for college, and the government's taking more of your paycheck, well, and depending on the state, like New York, you may even get a tax deduction. Stan, I want to thank you for joining us on the program. Appreciate it.
Thanks very much for having me.
Stan, thank you so much. Well, that concludes my interview with Stan Rosenberg. Once again, in this environment that we live in today, where the government's taken more of your earned income, well, you try to find a tax shelter where you can get them, whether it's a mortgage deduction, charitable deduction, tax deferral through contributing to, let's say, a 401k plan or an education plan. And here's one where you can put some money aside, depending on the state. You may get a tax deduction for it, but if you're saving for college, well, that money can come out tax-free, and if you can get that to compound, it may make a difference in terms of the type of college your children will be going to. On behalf of John Loeffler and myself, we'd like to thank you for joining us here on Lifetime Income. Kathleen Harris will be back next week from vacation. She'll be joining me here on the program. We're going to cover a lot of planning issues as we get into the new year. You know, this is the time of the year when everybody's thinking about their finances. It's a new year. You're thinking about the investment markets. What happened to the markets last year? Where should you put your money? And maybe you're just 1 year closer to retirement. So we're going to be talking about a lot of issues to make retirement planning and that retirement a better reality. So until you and I talk again, we hope you have a pleasant week.
You can subscribe to Financial Sense NewsHour in the iTunes and BlackBerry podcast libraries, or at feeds.feedburner.com/FSM. Find more information about our guests at www.financialsense.com/newshour. Friend us at www.facebook.com/financialsenseonline. For our on-the-go listeners, you can access Financial Sense on your mobile device at m.financialsense.com. The Financial Sense News Hour is for informational and educational purposes only and should not be considered as a solicitation or offer to purchase or sell any securities. The investments, investment strategies, and investment philosophies discussed or presented on the News Hour each involve their own unique risk factors, which are not discussed on the show. Responses to listener inquiries are based on the personal opinions of James Poplava and do not take into account listeners' suitability, objectives, or risk tolerance. Financial Sense NewsHour and its parent company shall not be liable for any financial losses that result from investing in any companies profiled on or advertising with Financial Sense, or arising out of the use of any material on the NewsHour. Be advised that you invest at your own risk.